Yes, I did give away my 3A. I gave it to my mother.
Mother's Day, of course, this last week in the US.
Yeah, and she really liked it. I don't know. I had that little anecdote on Twitter about her real response to it, which for the first 10 minutes, she just couldn't get out of this mindset that it was an iPhone for some reason. I think that there's like something about it. Like she's had Huawei phones, which she called her Huawei. She's had ZTE phones, which she called her ZTE. She's had other Android phones, which she either called her LG or her Android. And the Pixel, she was like, this is definitely an iPhone. I can just tell. And I was like, what? It's not. And it, obviously it's not. But I think, I don't know. I think there's something about... Like this is the first time that anyone's ever bought her a phone as like a gift or like gotten her a phone as a gift and given her a nice... I mean, for us, Pixel 3a is mid-ranger, but for most people, the Pixel 3a would be, you know, nothing. But for her, it's like, this is a super premium, like, you know, she's coming from like in bottom of the barrel crap phone that she bought at Cricut or whatever, you know, like that's what she's used to. And so she got this one, and I guess she just associated it being a premium device that I've told her many times just takes pretty much the best pictures that you can get out of a camera on a phone. For some reason, she just associated that with the iPhone, which I don't know.
That
I think
it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Huh. So you think it's more because you've told her that this is like you told her about the brand, or is it more of like a physical thing? Like she saw the phone and immediately thought it looked like an iPhone. What's going on there?
I think she's a little bit more out of touch than most people, even her age, with technology. But I think that. Honestly, I think what was happening is there's a little bit of blurring lines between Google and Apple. I think they're both just so interwoven and they're so correlated with each other in people's day-to-day lives. You know, how many... The main interaction people have with their MacBook is loading up Google.com as their homepage, Google Chrome, you know? The default search engine in Safari is Google.com, you know? So it's like... On iPhones, I mean. And so there, I think for some people that are super out of touch, there might be a blurred line between Google and Apple. And I think that's probably what was happening. Like she's enough out of touch that she doesn't know the difference between Google and Apple, really. Which, you know, moms, right? Like, it's not a big deal. I don't judge her for that. But, you know, I think that's where it's coming from. I think that... You know, it's a really, really nice phone. It has a premium brand on the box. It takes really good pictures. I can see how that could be conflated. Personally, I can. And not to mention, aesthetically, the Pixel is closer to being an iPhone than most Android phones, I think.
Yeah. That's a very interesting how that connection ended up being made. But yeah, so it's been a week. And
I'm still having my Google I/O hangover, I think.
it's slowing. I think everything is slowing down, I think, drastically. We're entering into the long summer.
Yeah, it's going to be a long, slow summer for sure. We tend to see with traffic on our site that it always builds in the weeks going up to an event. And then the event week itself is never crazy huge.
No.
It's usually the weeks that are going into the event. And so the month preceding I/O was a really strong month for us. And we would expect the same to happen with Made by Google later this year. But now, after that event's over, the rumors have died down. We're kind of in a little bit of a lull before Pixel 4 stuff starts picking up.
But to do some inside baseball, it's curious why there's never a spike on the day of, for us anyways, on the day of the event. Because you would think... that with so many people, okay, most people don't know when these events are actually happening. They just get the news when they get the news. So you would think that be like a strong, steady viewership after, like the weeks after the event as well.
I think it's a well-known thing in the industry that rumor cycles generate more traffic than actual events.
Yeah.
So I think on a higher level, that's just true about media publishing. And I mean, that's why we see on the internet. It's a part of why we see the sensationalizing of the ever increasing sensationalizing of stories in politics too, is because the rumors and the drama generate more traffic than any of, like, you know, see, it's like the difference between, you know, commentators, opinion hosts on, you know, Fox News versus watching C-SPAN. I would equivocate like Google I/O with watching C-SPAN in a way. You know, it's not juicy, it's not interesting in a way. And obviously some companies can pull it off better than others. Apple has made their event a huge consumer facing ordeal. I don't think Google I/O is as much. I mean, we especially saw that with the services event this year. It was all star power, and
you know. And what people gravitated to was the one piece of physical hardware, the credit card.
Yeah, I know that's a good point. Funny.
People like physical things. People like imagining owning things rather than interacting.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what was actually the most buzzy thing that came out of the event. Definitely in tech circles, the physical hardware card was by far, in a way, the biggest thing. Honestly, I don't know. I mean, having conversations with normal people, by normal people, I mean people that are outside of our circles, which I have a lot of those for kinds of friends. I haven't heard a single person mention the Apple card.
Interesting. So yeah,
I think we're in a bubble, but yeah. Anyways, that's a little bit of a tangent.
Yes. Very much so.
Before we go to Pixel 3a, okay. we've got a ton of time today to just waste. Before we go to Pixel 3a, let's talk about Pixel 4 a little bit. And this supposed leak that came out of one YouTuber this week. I just want to clarify something, because there have been sites that are reporting on these leaks coming from this guy John Prosser on YouTube. He's not an enemy of the site or anything like that, but I just want to make it very clear that there has not been a single credible Pixel 4 leak yet, like not a single one. And I mean, like, there's been lots of, I guess, rumors that have been turned into other rumors that, like, they're well-baked rumors. I think the most well-baked of those rumors is that the Pixel 4 will have a punch hole cut out at the top versus a notch, which may be true. I don't know. But I think that rumor spawned, like, I think there was one rumor that came from, like, the sketchiest of possible sources, which spurred on one graphics artist, I think it was Ben Geskin, if I remember correctly, to make some Pixel 4 renders, which were based on that idea, but have no basis in CAD specs or reality of any kind or any reliable reporting at all. And I think people took those renders now to be evidence of a real leak, or to suggest that information was in any way real or true. And that's spurring on even further rumors and speculation. So I just wanted to throw my little two cents in here that there's nothing. We know nothing about the Pixel 4 as of today. Hopefully that will change in the coming weeks. But I just felt like I needed to stand on that soapbox for a minute. There's a reason no Android blogs or us have reported on anything Google Pixel 4 leak related, really. Any thoughts on that?
No, not at all.
So Pixel 3a. Pixel 3a was launched at Google I/O as we expected. It was an interesting, as we talked about last week, an interesting return of Google hardware stuff to Google I/O after a 3 or 4 year hiatus of that. And it's a mid-ranger, and it's a $400 phone. I had a little piece. I don't know if I talked about this last week, but I had a little piece in the wake of that announcement that just said, like, this thing's a crazy good deal, especially at some of the prices that we saw and are still seeing. I think 9to5 Toys had some deals on Pixel 3a that they posted just a couple days ago, if not yesterday. But a lot of deals were popping up that were basically like, I don't know, some carriers were like, trade in your original Pixel and get a Pixel 3a for free, which is like, I don't know how many original Pixel owners are out there to where like that. That's just a no brainer of an upgrade, in my opinion. What do you think?
Yeah, it's if you're still actually using that phone as your daily driver, you're getting a so much better camera and features like Active Edge and just the latest software, cleanest software, Nightsight. Yeah,
it's a good one. Yeah, and not to mention it's a performance upgrade. Because as I've mentioned many times, the 670 is trending or was benchmarked similarly to the Pixel 2. So it's definitely at least a one generation upgrade in terms of performance. Have you been using the Pixel 3a
extensively?
Okay, so it's been pretty much your daily driver since they announced it.
Yeah.
And I guess what I want to know, because you are a hardcore Pixel 3 daily driver until the Pixel 3a, and now you switched. Mm-hmm. What are you noticing going from the Pixel 3 to the Pixel 3a for a week or two?
So the 3a is subtly lighter. It's not significant. If you're holding both phones in your hands, you don't notice it immediately. But over time, the plastic makes a real difference in how it's lighter to hold, and also the materials. The materials play such a big deal, in my opinion. The common convention is that the Pixel 3 has this glass back, but I think the more interesting thing to look at is the surrounding frame around the edges. On the Pixel 3, it's metal coated in this, like, I don't know what that material is. But anyways, on the Pixel 3a...
It's painted metal, basically.
Metal. Painted metal is a better word for it. In comparison, the Pixel 3a is this like glossy plastic. And honestly, I enjoy this plastic. Apple made a big deal about the 5C being unapologetically plastic. And I think Google is heavily calling this polycarbonate on its spec sheet. But I think it's I don't know how to describe it. It's so much nicer. It's shiny but light. It's bulbous. Something I said on Twitter. It's ever so slightly thicker. But the end result is this bulbous phone that feels great in the hand. It's hard to describe. It's a cheaper phone, but it's at the same time it's a nicer one to hold compared to the Pixel 3.
Are you just not a fan of, like, for instance, for me, I'm a big fan of that painted metal on the side, because to me it feels similar to the very, in my opinion, premium feeling stainless steel edges of the iPhone X and XS. And I'm a fan of that, but I will say I think it's a little bit, maybe it's slipperier.
Yeah, I would say that.
And it gets cold too. I mean, it doesn't, like, that's one thing that it doesn't, you know, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
it just
yeah.
doesn't retain heat the way the plastic one does. So I don't know. Does having the plastic make using your phone objectively better in any way, or is it just a feel?
It makes it nicer to hold. I'm a lover of small phones, and the Pixel 3a is slightly larger screen size wise and body wise, but it's just bulbous in a cute way that makes it easier to hold. I think the curvatures are so smoother. It meets the body, meets the screen in a cleaner fashion. It's all these tiny things that were really shocking me about how much I prefer this $399 phone to something that's
$799. Interesting. Well, on the size, actually, as someone who likes smaller phones, do you like the slightly larger 3A versus the 3?
Yeah, I think the difference is negligible. But, like, speaking on, like, looking at the phone, I actually like how there are no front-firing speakers on the 3A in terms of, like, getting and maybe it's just me, but on the 3, I come across the bottom speaker bezel. Like, I just feel it when I accidentally swipe on it or whatever. But again, since it's bottom firing speakers on the 3A, it's, I end up liking this more.
Interesting. Another question.
Yes.
You've had it for a week now, and I know a week's not really much or enough time to really gauge this, but how has the performance hit been? Have you noticed anything that's... Well, I mean, no one might have a very good perspective on this given the performance problems the Pixel 3 has had, but does it feel slower to you? Is there anything that you can tell just in your daily use it feels sluggish?
Honestly, no. Between what I'm mostly using on this is Chrome and Twitter to just browse, and just browse Twitter and open links. And no, it's smooth. It's maybe I don't have that eye for like very slightly faster load times or app load times, but no, to me this is fine. It's just as fast. It definitely does not impact day-to-day usage.
Interesting. So it's just crazy. I don't know if that's a testament to problems of the $800 phone, to where the $800 Pixel 3 doesn't stack up against its $800 and up competitors, or if this is a testament to how well optimized Google is how good they are at optimizing software, to where it doesn't matter. Or it didn't end up mattering whether or not it had effectively last year's flagship chip versus this year's flagship chip. And I guess, to be fair, comparing a Pixel 2 and a Pixel 3 side by side is not going to,
The Pixel 2 is garbage. Oh.
I don't think it's going to have any, and maybe your Pixel 2 has some problems that.
No, it's normal. Totally physically. I hate using the phone physically.
Well, I'm talking about performance-wise, I can't tell much difference. And I couldn't, when I was reviewing them last year, I couldn't tell much of a difference between the Pixel 2 and Pixel 3 either. I guess that's either. One thing on a long list of, I guess, features and value where going with the phone that's half the price is you're not actually losing anything. With the camera, I mean, what about the camera?
It's slower.
Like the snapping pictures is a little bit slower, or the post-processing stuff.
It's a post-processing takes longer. You can see that notification.
Okay.
It's there for longer.
But it's negligible enough to where it wouldn't really change your verdict of whether or not you should buy it.
No, I wouldn't say so. It's
Yeah, except for the fact you don't have the wide-angle selfie camera.
I've never used it, but yeah.
That's pretty much the only thing that... And even... Didn't the Pixel 3a have a time-lapse exclusive for like a couple days?
Yeah, for like a minute, a hot minute on Tuesday morning, it had that time-lapse feature.
Right. So it's like, I don't know, it's very clear that performance is not a sacrifice going half price. According to you, feel in the hand is not a sacrifice going half price. Camera is not really a sacrifice going half price. What is a sacrifice going half price? Is there anything that like stands out to you?
No. It's like it's annoyances rather than anything. It's minor annoyances rather than anything major is, I think, the difference. Like again, the only obvious thing I can point to is the camera not being as fast.
One thing that my mom said, like my mom's only complaint after using it for a week, was, "Why is Google Assistant always running?" Which what? I said, what do you mean? Why is Google Assistant always running? She said, did this come pre-installed or did you install it? And I told her, of course, it came pre-installed. And I was like, what do you mean it's always running?
You
hold the home button to like, to activate it. But other than that, it's not always running. And she's like, yeah, that screen to the left of the home screen. And I was like... Oh, that's what you think Google Assistant is?
Interesting.
So she thinks Discover is the assistant, and she doesn't like the fact that it's always running on her home screen, basically.
Oh,
I don't know what to think of that, but I was like, that's normal. You can't turn it off and don't worry about it. But I don't know. Apparently she asked me, is that draining my battery life?
Such an interesting observation.
Obviously no, but you could always her things. Obviously she thinks the camera's amazing. She thinks that it's like magic because she's coming from garbage phone. So
to go back on the hardware slightly, I think my pet theory about why I think this is better than the 3 is because the HTC, this is the Pixel 3a is the first phone that the HTC the acquired HTC team in Taiwan was able to work on, to develop. That's what Google has been saying in interviews. And I think it shows. Maybe that team knows so much more about bringing a phone to market. HTC definitely had like mid-range phones were their thing for a while. Good plastic mid-range phones and interesting body designs. But I think they might have brought some of that over to this phone.
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know about that because it's really unclear who or what built the
Pixel 3. Yeah.
Cuz it definitely it was very clear that the original Pixel was an HTC contract basically with Google's brand slapped on it. Because the whole thing with the original Pixel was Google wanted to build a Nexus phone originally. It was originally going to be a Nexus phone, but they wanted to not have the Nexus branding on it. They just wanted to put the Google branding on it. It ended up being Google Pixel, but HTC was the company that was like, yeah, we'll build the phone and it's okay. You don't have to put the name on it. Huawei was in the bidding for that, but they were not okay with the idea of just doing a contracted OEM deal. And then the Pixel 2, I think, was very similar. The Pixel 2 XL seemed to be largely contracted out to LG, and the smaller Pixel 2 was HTC. The 3 was not as clear, because this was post the deal closing on the HTC team. The launch, at least, was post the HTC deal closing. Neither of the devices scream like they were manufactured by either HTC or LG. This year there was a split in the display components, so that was one of the things that tipped us off that, you know, the Pixel 2 XL was manufactured by LG, was that it had an LG display. This year the Pixel 3 XL had an LG display and the smaller Pixel had an a Samsung display. Long story short, it's not clear who made the Pixel 3, and it sounds to me like it was a mishmash of all these groups.
Still the mishmash, and that anything going forward, which I don't think most people expected 3A to come up, is that HTC team. So I think this is a good sign. If this is what they're able to do at $399, imagine what they can do with more premium materials later this fall.
Yeah, it's weird to think that phone's already done, signed off on. That the Pixel 3, it exists, it's a thing, it's already done for the most part. We just don't know what it is yet. I think given the Pixel's history, we should assume that Google will not pull, like, and this is actually maybe a good segue into talking about OnePlus 7, is that the OnePlus 7 is in so many ways such a completely different approach to smartphones. And it's really interesting to me, given the timing of these two launches, Pixel 3a and OnePlus 7 Pro, with them juxtaposed against each other, because, you know, even though they're not similar price points, they're not similar feature sets, they're not similar target markets, they're not similar in many, many ways, but they are, I guess, comparable still, given that they are both phones that are underneath that premium tier. They're both underneath the in America, there's really two categories. There's the people who buy a $200 phone or a $100 phone or a free phone on a carrier, or they go all out and they buy the latest iPhone. That's been just shown in the market that's just the truth about what kind of phones Americans buy. Interestingly, Pixel 3a and OnePlus 7 Pro, despite how different they are, they're both in neither of those categories. So they're both appealing to what is, as of right now, a very small segment of the market, maybe 10% of the market, maybe 30%, maybe 20%. I don't know, but it's small compared to the number of people who just buy the free phone or just buy the latest Samsung / iPhone. That's what the OnePlus 7 Pro and the Pixel 3a have in common. And it's really interesting to see just such a different approach and to that market. Like the Pixel 3a is, we're trying to appeal to the people that just want a good phone, just want a quote unquote good phone, but they are maybe like Google highlighted this on the IO stage of like, you know, phones have gotten too expensive. You know, it's like they're trying to appeal to people who have that feeling that, or that sense that, you know, there used to be good phones, and they used to not cost $1,000. You know, like that's the market that Google is really appealing to, and they're not doing anything flashy. They're just making a solid phone. And I think, I mean, my little one anecdote test with my mother and how ecstatic she was proves that there is, I don't know, an opportunity there. OnePlus 7 Pro, on the other hand, is appealing to similar segment of the market, but completely different. Like they're trying to pack as many flagship features as possible. They're trying to do this edge to edge all glass display with a very Samsung-esque premium edge, with this like gimmicky pop-up selfie camera. You know the whole, like, they're trying to make a phone that is an everything phone, and then they're trying to price it under the premium tier.
Yes.
Anyways, I don't know what my point is with that, but it's just interesting that, I mean, we don't see that often, where two phones are launched in summer and they're both interesting and they're both different in similar ways, if that makes sense. And they were announced within a week of each other. So I just wanted to highlight that.
I think my observation of these events being so close is that Google and OnePlus flipped their original narratives, their original missions. OnePlus was, how much was their first phone? Like $400? $500 maybe?
I think it was $300.
$300.
Yeah, because cheaper. Back then flagships were like $600 and they were trying to do the flagship killer at half the price or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they switched around, for at least for this mid-generation announcement from Google. They went for the cheap zone, and OnePlus went for the high, more premium market. And it's curious which approach is going to win, because in contrast to what you said, I think OnePlus is going, it is firmly entering the premium market. I know it is slightly cheaper than most premium phones, but I think they're definitely going to a place that is more expensive and a departure from their company's history.
Well, I think that it's a fact that the OnePlus 7 Pro is closer in price to the Pixel 3a than it is to the iPhone 10.
How much was it again?
$669. So, I don't know.
I think it's the messaging is different. Like, it's, this doesn't...
Sure, the messaging is different. Absolutely, the messaging is different. The messaging with OnePlus is, you can get one of those crazy $1,200 phones that you see on the market, but you can get it from us for $669. Google's messaging is not, we're bringing this crazy premium experience and we're going to offer it at, you know, a cheaper price.
Well, I think what's crazy about this market is that for like the past 2-3 years of more expensive phones have led many to feel that that $600 is... That argument didn't make sense. But anyways, I think that $600 price point is... lost my train of thought.
Yeah, I know. It's fascinating what OnePlus has done over the last few years. And that's as You know, they started with that $300 phone, which was the flagship killer of its time, but phone prices are double what they were, and so now their flagship killer is half the price of, you know, the iPhone XS Max or whatever, and they're still doing I don't buy the narrative that OnePlus's strategy has changed. You know, it's easy to see OnePlus and see, okay, they started making $300 phones, now they're making $700 phones, ergo OnePlus is now trying to enter the premium market. I think OnePlus's strategy from day one has been, we want to make a phone that has everything that those top-end phones have at half the price.
Yeah.
And as phone prices have gone up sharply, they're just doubling down on that strategy every year. But just naturally, that means that their phone prices are going up. I think what they wanted to do with the OnePlus 7 Pro is send the message that this is a premium phone. Like, and it is. I mean, in many respects, it is a premium phone. Like, it is. But I think adding that Pro branding is trying to maybe send a message to buyers that's not necessarily true. They could have just called it the OnePlus 7. They could have called what became the OnePlus 7 Pro the OnePlus 7, and it would not be at all out of line with the rest of their strategy for the last four years. It would be perfectly in line, in my opinion, if they had just done the OnePlus 7 Pro and called it OnePlus 7, and it would be like, oh, okay, just like the rest of the phone market, OnePlus's phones are going up in price every year by $100 or $50 or whatever it is. So I guess what I'm saying is I think this is business as usual for OnePlus with a clever marketing strategy added on.
I'm going to advance this controversial theory that because of the past 3 years of prices, there's a middle ground, that $600 middle ground doesn't exist anymore. Either you have a really cheap phone or you have a premium phone. And I don't think that middle ground, that middle space of $649 was the iPhone's price for a long time and the first Pixels, exists anymore. So we're at a market where people I think the US market places very well. Either you have a cheap phone or you have an expensive phone. And I think $660 is, in the eyes of most people, firmly in that premium category now.
I feel like what's happened is OnePlus is going after the premium category, but they're going after people who don't want to spend as much. And the Pixel 3a is,
I don't think
ironically,
that's sustainable. I don't think there's enough of a market in that $649 price.
They're not selling volume. They're not selling anywhere near a volume that's competitive with Apple and Samsung. To be fair, neither is Google. But what's interesting to me is I feel like the Pixel 3a is kind of more, I guess, comparable to the Moto G or the Moto X.
Definitely.
In that it's like, I feel like the Pixel 3a is for people who would instinctively, I mean, I think of people like my mother or, you know, my wife or lots of my friends who would just instinctively, like, they're very just economically minded people who are just like, I just need a phone that gets the job done.
Yeah.
At a good price. And the Pixel 3a is like the best phone for those people. Like, in my opinion. And so it's like, I mean, especially with these recent promotions that have priced it at $300, you know, because that's like Moto G level, you know, it's like, this is the no-brainer phone. This is the everyone should buy this phone unless you need something extravagant, right? Like, it's like, that's how I felt about the Moto G for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, even in the midst of all these other Android phones, the Moto G was like, at the time, the base phone. It was the good phone. It was the, I recommend this for your mom and your daughter and your, you know, or buy it as a gift for your grandmother. Like, it's just the everyone phone, and it was good enough, and it was $200, you know. This is kind of like that, but just built for another era, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
That's how I feel about it. And the OnePlus 7 is not that at all. But ironically, in my it's interesting that they both end up not too far apart from one another in MSRP.
Yeah, I would say that as well.
Yeah, the MSRPs aren't far off, but their target markets are pretty disconnected.
Getting back to that Moto G for a second, actually. So, yes, there were many takes on that also said that the Pixel 3a is very much the Google's Moto G moment. That being said, I think they're on the Moto G 7 right now. Okay, 7 years later, is the Moto G 7 the same as the first Moto G?
No, it's living in a different era, like I said. The philosophy with the Moto G stayed the same. It was this is the Moto phone for its budget. It's the budget Moto phone, right? The philosophy, but the dynamics of the market as a whole changed dramatically.
Yeah.
So what that phone means in the market has changed a lot.
And it's definitely moved to the international. Like, that is where Motorola is positioning. Yeah.
Moto as a company and their ethos and their philosophy and their products are not the same at all.
Yeah.
I mean, when Rick Osterloh was running Moto, the Moto G was, even the original Moto X. I think maybe the original Moto X is a better comparison. The original Moto X was the base phone. It was the good phone, right? Like good phone TM. That's what that is, you know? And that's what I feel like the Pixel 3a is. And the Moto G and the Moto X both kind of embodied that, in my opinion, for the first few years. And then they just lost their identity. They lost their... I can't recommend the Moto Z 4 or whatever, you know? That whole Motorola as a whole, it's obviously not Motorola anymore. It's Lenovo. So it's like... That entire brand has just lost its way, in my opinion. As the market shifts and as different phones, you know, take footholds in different parts of the market, different brands and different OEMs take what in my opinion is the phone you should buy in those different segments. Like, if we made a list that was like, what phone should you buy at $100, $200, $300, $400, $500, $600, $700, $800, Moto would not be anywhere on that list. But when the Moto E and the Moto G and the Moto X were all on the market at the same time, it had three spots on that list.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
Very compelling, a very similarly designed, shared design languages. They had the story, and it worked. So with that history taken in context, how far do you think Google is going to get with this A line of phones?
I don't know.
One weekend.
It's an enigma, man. It's hard to think about, because if these A line of phones stay awesome in comparison to the flagship Pixels, there's just multiple aspects here. I think Google needs to have a flagship premium phone. I think part of that is just proving that they can make one and being a respectable brand and a respectable competitor to Apple and Samsung in that top end of the market. Will they ever sell well? I don't know. But I think they should keep trying. I think they should keep doing them. Pixel 3a is almost an identical phone to the Pixel 3 at half the price. It has hardly any trade-offs. And that's a problem for the Pixel 3. This phone will almost certainly sabotage Pixel 3 sales between now and when the Pixel 4 launches. And the same would happen if Google repeated this trend next year with the Pixel 4a. And not to mention, I mean, in this case, the Pixel 3's sales will be cannibalized probably. But next year, if there's any sign that they're going to do it again, the Pixel 4's first half of the year sales could be cannibalized because of the expectation that there will be a Pixel 4a that is half the price and just as good. So, honestly, if they can't just do this again next year. I don't think that's an option for Google. Because what they need is the Pixel line to grow.
Yeah.
And ultimately, maybe that will mean the premium phones are dead. Maybe that's ultimately what it means. I hope it's not, but maybe that's ultimately what it means.
Or it becomes so much more of a niche that some people buy it.
Right, right. But even then, like, even you, you're a premium phone buyer.
Yeah.
You're a premium phone user, and even you, the Pixel 3a is more than enough for you and more than good enough compared to the Pixel 3. So I don't think they can just do the same thing again next year. I think what's going to happen next year is that the Pixel 4a is going to be more obviously worse. Because there's no way when the Pixel 4 launches, I don't think there's going to be people assuming, okay, Google's TikTok cycle is to announce a really good phone and then announce the exact same phone at half the price 6 months later. There's no way people know that. We'll know that with the Pixel 4. But by the time Pixel 5 came around, they could. If they just repeated the exact same cycle one time this year when they announced Pixel 4 and it was premium, and then Pixel 4a came around and it was launched in the summer and it was identical except for very minor trade-offs, then people would start to assume that, okay, what is the point? There's no point in buying the premium Pixel at all.
How about this idea? The Pixel 3a stays in the market for 18 months or something. And that Google waits another 5 to sync up a 5A and 5 at the same time. Who knows? But it's...
Well, I don't think that'll happen either, because I think the whole point of the A, or it seems like part of the point of the A line, is kind of a response to the Pixel's not selling well. And so Google wants to push volume and they want to push units. I don't know. I don't know if that's completely true, but that's what it seems like. Yeah.
But yeah, these phones, it's very interesting to see how Google right now, they obviously have forecasts about how well they think the 3A is going to do. But it's, again, the 4 is set in stone. Any success with the 3A won't be reflected until upcoming generations, the 5 at the earliest. So I think Google is still made by Google is still operating on the plan that they probably established at the first Pixel, and it goes, 5 years, and then that's when they'll maybe start reassessing.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if this is going to happen because it's too late in the product cycle to maybe for Google to have maybe even made this plan. But like I said last show, I think what might be the best remedy to this would be to make the premium Pixel a super premium device.
Give the 3A a big holiday push, or maybe even keep the... No, I don't think they would keep the 3 around, but maybe the 3A gets a big holiday push this season. Or whenever they decide to do this.
Because I think what Google might be seeing, and I think what's happening in the smartphone market in general, is the commoditization of smartphones. I mentioned this before, and that's... I don't think people are interested in this never-ending two-year refresh cycle. I think people are starting to treat their phones like laptops, and in that case, it makes way more sense to spend $1,200 on a phone. And so, what is Google's offering in this new... iPhone XS Max, you know, Galaxy Note or Galaxy Fold world, right?
Yeah.
Like, what is Google's offering in this new world where people spent $1,000, $1,500, $2,000 on a phone? That would be really cool to see, me personally, to see Google make a phone that is the ultimate Google phone, the most premium experience possible, even if it doesn't sell crazy volumes. And that, assuming they can be competitive and make a really, really great phone in its own right, even if it's not going to become the third tentpole of American smartphone sales. What if it never becomes Apple, Samsung, Google? That probably won't happen. But if it's a really, really great phone in its own right and it's reviewed extremely well, that could significantly help Google push 4A, 5A, 6A, 7A, you know, premium phones, or not premium phones, but cheaper phones, and maybe turn this thing into a business. That's I'm not expert. I'm not Osterloh, but that seems like a potentially viable strategy to me.
a more viable strategy than what's going on before last week.
Right. So.
I believe we were talking about the OnePlus 7 Pro.
Yeah, I've never used one, so I don't have much to say about it. Our Ben has one and our Damien has one, and they've been the ones that have been writing about it and reviewing it. Ben actually really liked one of his pieces this week. He talked about kind of a little bit of a conflict between what's going on, or what has been going on, with Sam or with OnePlus's branding versus what they're actually selling. Basically saying, you know, they called this phone ultra premium like 20 times during their announcement event. And that's, I think, the meat of what Ben had issue with, because they're selling a phone at, you know, $669, $749, and calling it ultra premium. And that would suggest to me that it not only has everything that an iPhone X or iPhone XS or Galaxy Note 8 or whatever has, and it would have more than that. And as Ben rightfully points out, there are still some places where OnePlus is clearly cutting corners. None of those places are really new, but they're cutting places. They're cutting corners, and for sure. My biggest thing is 2 years of software updates is a little paltry.
Still no iOS charging.
No wireless charging for whatever reason, even though that seems to be on the uptrend.
Waterproofing, which we still, as a side note, the Pixel 3a, it's the waterproofing spec, I don't think is listed on the spec side. So.
Huh. That's, maybe we need a bucket.
I'm good, thank you. I'm good, thank you. I think I read somewhere it's IP52.
You can expense it.
I'm good, thanks. Which is would be worse than the original Pixel's IP53. So actually that is a thing I would miss about using the Pixel 3 and switching to a Pixel 3 as a daily driver. I think waterproofing is an understandable thing that people want, and that people live messy lives, and
sure,
people take beach photos.
That's actually one thing of everything that OnePlus is cutting corners on. That's one thing that I don't have a problem with, and it's not because I don't like waterproofing or don't want my phones to be waterproof. My reasoning is that IP rating, all it does is prove that the phone has waterproofing. It doesn't say whether or not it has it. It just proves it. It's a stamp of approval. It's a stamp of certification that it passes so-and-so tests. And there's nothing to say that if those tests, if OnePlus 7 Pro went through those tests, that it wouldn't pass them. If OnePlus's argument is that this is a money-saving measure, then it very well may pass the IP58, 68, whatever tests. They just don't want to pay for the stamp.
I think having that stamp is a nice safety blanket for people, especially. It's better than phone insurance almost. It's no way.
But does it matter if the end result is that it is equivalent?
Would you use your phone in the wild that way though? If you didn't know it had that level of safety?
I mean, if the company told me that it did, I think that OnePlus outwardly saying, "Hey, this is waterproof enough to save you from any normal real world problem." Like, these ratings are also meaningless in the sense that, like, you don't need much water protection to save the phone from 90% of real world ish, dropping in the sink for 5 seconds, or being out on the beach and dropping into the water for like a minute or something. You know, like, all these situations, whether it's an IP57, IP58, IP whatever, like, you don't need much to save the phone from those real world scenarios. And I think OnePlus dunking in a bucket, as meme worthy as that is, I think that is representative of maybe even worse than what people would normally experience with phones and water.
I think it's not just that one time incident. I think it's as these phones get more waterproofed from generation to generation, I think people, they increase the expectation for these phones to be to be able to work everywhere when it's raining. I think people who live in raining environments, this is a valid concern for them. That or they just buy a case.
Well,
just...
rain, I mean, even phones that aren't IP certified, like even $200 phones that you buy that are crap at like Verizon or Cricket or whatever, even those phones don't have much problem standing up in the rain.
I wouldn't test it though. I think what the reaction that people end up doing is just putting the phone away rather than being able to use it when it's raining to, I don't know, find a bus schedule.
I mean, for example, I would have even the Pixel 3a, which is a big question mark on what it's rated, I wouldn't feel any concern at all using that in pouring rain.
I have felt concern in day-to-day usage, brushing my teeth. I keep it in my pocket instead of putting it on the counter in case water splashes on it.
I don't think you need to be concerned. I bet you could dunk it for 5 minutes and there'd be no problem. I really do. I think phones are far more waterproof than people think.
I think that most people are... So the long story is that, long story short, is that the iPhone for longer than before Apple advertised had water protections. And I think to Apple's credit, it created a base level of safety, but those protections are always there.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I wouldn't have any problem using Pixel 3a in the shower.
Oh, bold man. I still have.
I also don't baby any of my products or devices, but I will just say anecdotally, like I don't even think the IP rating of phones never crosses my mind, and I've had some accidents, and and it's been 5, 6, 7 years since I've had to put an electronic device in a bag of rice. Because devices these days are pretty
tough. Yeah.
Even the ones that aren't certified are pretty well protected, I think.
Mm.
So that's just my 2 cents on the whole dunking OnePlus 7 in a bucket thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Are we done? Is that all we got?
I think that's all we got about these phones, about these very two interesting... this is probably going to be the most interesting event for like the next few weeks until the home Nest Hub Max comes out, probably.
What's going to be the most interesting event? OnePlus 7?
No, these two phones back-to-back is going to be like the last major thing before Nest Hub Max, would you say? I can't think of anything else.
Yeah, Nest Hub Max will launch, but that's going to be... They're probably going to reach out to me about sending me a review unit. I just realized that, and I'm very excited now.
Yes, that's the next highlight.
I will have my 9th Google Home.
Yeah.
I actually unplugged a couple of them this week because I realized that they were plugged in and never being used.
Yeah.
I had one in my office and I turned off the microphone on it, like the manual. I turned the switch on the back turn it off because it was the only time it was being used was when I was saying a hot word during Alphabet Scoop. That was the only time it was ever being triggered.
Yeah.
So, I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward particularly the face match stuff. That's what I'm stoked for.
I want myself a security camera. I've been avoiding getting a real one.
Getting tons of Google Homes is interesting because you can like recycle through them. So like I am now going to have a home hub, and I had two home hubs. Now I only have one, but I had two, and that means I can get rid of or throw away one of my Google Home minis or whatever and replace it with the home hub.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a cycle. Well, the end, I think, it's safe to say, I think Google's end goal is just replacing the speakers, all the speakers with a smart display that do more.
Really? You think that's the end goal?
I don't think speakers make sense in this. You either have a premium speaker or you have a home hub. I don't think the regular Google Home and the Home Mini have much of a value when we're looking at the $99 Nest Hub.
That's an interesting take. I'm more screen averse than you.
Yeah, definitely.
Just in life.
Yeah. So
if it were up to me, if I were a consumer, I wouldn't buy the home hubs at all. Like period. Full stop. I would just have audio speakers. I would just have the standard Google Homes. That's just me. I It grinds my gears so hard when I'm in the kitchen at night and that bright white screen goes, hello.
Oh, gosh.
Good morning. And it's like 11:45 at night and I'm trying to get a glass of water and it's just like,
I think it's passive. For most people, it's passive and it's just like a digital alarm clock. I have dozens. I had dozens of those, but well, two or three. And then I just replaced them with Home Hubs. Nest Hubs. This branding is very hard already.
It might just be because I have too many screens in my life and I have too much screen time already. So any tech product that is makes my life better that doesn't have a screen is like a major win for me.
Interesting. And that is the idea of ambient computing. Most of the first wave of ambient computing is going to be audio-based. Hearables, yes. And whatnot.
Yes, audio augmented reality. It's my favorite category of tech product right now.
Yeah, but you'll still need a camera at the end of the day to know what you're looking at. But that's...
All right, well, yeah. Before we get off on an AR tangent, which we are very prone to do.
Absolutely.
Maybe we'll do that next week if next week is as slow and boring as this week was in terms of Google News. And until then, you can tune in to Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every Wednesday, but Friday really lately. and you can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Cast, Google Podcasts, Google Play. And you can also listen over at 9to5google.com. Please, please, please head over to iTunes or Pocket Casts or wherever you rate podcasts and leave us a star rating if you like the show. If you don't like the show, don't leave us a star rating. yeah, that would help us out a lot. We're just trying to get our names out there as much as we can. It's an uphill battle for sure.
Yeah, we want to be more popular than that ice cream shop in New York.
yes, indeed. Thanks for tuning in as always, and thanks, Admir, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.